Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's May 3rd, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Are you craving deep dish pizza? Are you missing it? Are you jonesing for it? How about the cold weather? The big lake? What? Anything?
I'm not actually jonesing for any of that. definitely the weather sucked on this trip. Of course, the last day was 89. I'm like, great. The day that we're just driving back to the airport, It's 89. Boy, I had my fill of pizza. We did the Chicago pizza tour. Have you ever heard of this?
Well, I have heard of it, but I never actually knew what it was.
It was actually pretty cool. You know, you give them, I don't know, if it's $60 or something, and you meet at a pizza place, and you have a slice there, and they tell you about it, and then they put you on a bus, and they take you to three more spots, and you're totally fat and happy by the end of it, and you get to try a bunch of different pizzas. So that's the way to do it in Chicago, I think.
Wow, $60 for four slices. It's $15 a slice.
Minimum four slices.
Oh, minimum. Oh, okay. Yes.
If you could eat more, you can. And I don't think we had seconds anywhere that we were that filling. Because you know, Chicago, I mean, it's not all deep dish, but it's
It is big,
filling.
Though. Yeah. I do remember that. I remember us jumping up on the benches and writing on the walls of one of those places. And
that's Gino's Pizza
Gino's,
East.
Yep.
And that's one of the 12 pizza places in rotation on the tour. But it was not the one of them that we went to the tour. So the next day, the wife's like, you know what? I want more deep dish. And I'm like, well, we got to go to Gino's East. So we went to Gino's East. And as soon as we got our seat and ordered, I'm like, I'm going to go look for our graffiti.
Yeah.
And I wandered back, and I remembered exactly where it was and shot a picture of it. And it was kind of cool. Remembering back that day with Chicago Joe and you and having some great pizza.
I'm glad they didn't paint over it.
No. In fact, actually, a couple of people, I think, wrote a little bit over it, but, you know, you've got that big, braggy kind of handwriting, so it's kind of hard to obscure your graffiti, so.
Did I draw the A? I can't remember if I drew the A.
Believe the A was there.
All right, I couldn't remember if I did, but that's cool, though.
But, yeah, had a good trip there, went down, did a little business, and obviously had some fun, and, you know, we just mentioned Chicago Joe, and I can just not stop gushing about Chicago Joe. Every time we talk about the show, I mean, if everybody in the world was like Chicago Joe, this world would be 40 times more fabulous than it already is.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Just met me and both days, drove me around, introduced me to the managers and stuff. And I gotta tell you, our first meeting was at Horseshoe Hammond. Relatively new poker room manager. I hadn't had a chance to meet there. And they got some new stuff coming up, which was cool. And then we left, and I decided to follow Joe to our next stop. Pull out of the parking garage, look at his license plate, Ante Up 6.
Nice.
And it's his brand new, I don't know, I think he got it in August. Brand new car. He says it's his dream car. He calls it the Ante Up Mobile. He actually told the dealer that. He's like, you know what I'm naming this? My Ante Up Mobile. Been saving up for his whole life for it, and it's a very nice car. I got the license plate, and then I'm like, so, you know, I get to the next stop. I'm like, Joe, I got to take a picture of you with this plate. And then he's like, I've been waiting for you to see it. And so then I'm like, yeah, I'm curious, was 1 through 5 taken? And he's like, no, I wanted 6.
He wanted 6?
Yeah, and I noticed his email address has a 6 in it. So 6 has got a magical power for Chicago Joe.
Huh. So he must be the guy that loves to play A6 for that one time it comes 2, 3, 4, 5.
Could be. But definitely great hanging out with him and our good friend Kirk Follow at the Windy City Poker Championship. He just had a great event, did very well for a lot of charities up there. And Hung out with Chicago Brian for a little bit, doing some business for us. And I wish we could have had a meetup, but I just had too much else going on. But always good to get up and see that Chicago clan. Yeah, that's probably our tightest knit.
Oh, yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not a ton new going on in the casinos up there, but this trip, it was the first time I actually got to sit down with the owner of Rockford Charitable Gaming, and I'm kind of briefly knew a little bit about Illinois charitable gaming laws, dealings with Kirk and Windy City, which, you know, always supports charity, but it was really good to actually learn a ton more about how this operates, and, it's a pretty good, operation, both from the operator and also for charities. Essentially, and we'll get too deep into the laws here, but charities can hold four poker events a year. Uh-huh. And venues can hold eight events a year. So, what a lot of these charities do is they hire companies like Rockford or Windy City or somebody like that to essentially run the poker for them. But they essentially... hold on to all the money and obviously pay the company that comes in, for table rentals and ship rentals and some advertising, and then keep the rest. So really, it's one of these great opportunities where people get to play poker, have a good time, and benefit charities. And the charities really don't have to do a ton other than show up and kind of, offer some sweat labor.
Yeah, right.
And obviously, I think our folks in Illinois would like to see more casino gaming expanded there. And I know they continue to talk about it up there. In the absence of it, there are a ton of places in the Chicagoland area, and probably throughout the state, to be honest, but definitely in the Chicago area, where you can go and then play some friendly poker every night and, make some money for a charity.
Has it changed at all since you and I were up there for the it was the Annie Up event when we were there that time doing the TV and stuff. Have the laws changed at all, or is it still pretty much the same when we were there?
Yeah, I don't believe they've changed. I mean, I got a much better education on it this time than I did the first time we were up there doing it. I don't get the impression that it's changed at all,
okay.
But it might have. But definitely, you can see where companies like Rockford, there's a nice little business model. Obviously, he said... poker's down everywhere, unfortunately, these days, and his business is no different. And obviously, the shame there is when his business is down, charitable donations are down as well, too.
Right.
So that's never good. But I believe he said he still does about 300 events a year. So
wow,
that's a packed schedule.
That's a lot of events.
And pretty smart how he does it too. They try not to. They try to move it around every night. Obviously, they're working with the charities, and where they want to have the event. But you kind of got three people working together. You got the charity, you got the provider of the equipment and the games, and then also the venue. So a lot of scheduling comes into play, and it was very interesting to hear how he schedules the events so the players, they're not on top of each other. So, and Monday you might be in Rockford, and Tuesday you might be in Roselle, and certain areas do much better on certain nights. And he's kind of like honed this way of doing business. I think he's been in business 25 years. Whenever the charitable gaming law started, they were first right up there and doing it a long time. And what he said was interesting is when they started, they did a lot of casino games, blackjack, roulette, things like that. And these days, they don't do any of that. It's all poker. So that's changed.
So explain to me a little bit now. So when you say that they could do four a year, you mean one charity can do four a year?
One 501(c)(3) or C3, whatever those things are. Yeah.
Right.
legitimate nonprofit, not the Chris Consenza Anti-Defamation League.
So basically you're telling me then this... The Rockford has basically like 70 charities lined up to be able to do 300 events a year, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Absolutely. Wow, that's crazy. That's incredible. That's a lot of hard work, man.
Yeah, yeah. And, again, like I said, I mean, it's really great for the charities because, again, I think, from what I understand, they just have to provide the sweat equity, have people there to, take the money and counted down and that. So, you know, in terms of, you know, you think of all the ways the charities raise money, you know, bake sales and door to door and selling over portion their kids to sell overpriced popcorn, you know, things like that. I mean, this is fairly easy. I mean, now that you know these established companies, you just got to pick which company you want to go with. Yeah. And pick your four poker events a year. Now, obviously, you can only do four, so, you know, it's not your only fundraiser. You got to do some other stuff. But yeah, it's a really good way for these folks to make some money. So,
and are the locations pretty stable so that, you know, as a person that's not, you know, you're like, hey, I'm going to play some poker tonight. Where do I go? And there's always going to be poker at the VFW Thursday nights because that's when he holds the charity or is like that? Or?
Yeah, it gets kind of tough because each venue can only host 8 charity events a year.
Oh,
so,
geez.
You know, once you use those. So, yeah, there's a lot of scheduling and strategy that has to go in to this. So, and obviously, I mean, if you're a charity or a venue, you want to be sure that, well, a venue probably a little less because a venue, I think you're just, you know, charging your normal rental fee. But a charity, you actually want to, you know, be sure you're picking the right nights to maximize your money. But what Rockford does, and I assume other companies do too, but he showed me, they send out a little postcard every month that just has their schedule. And obviously, they have a website and all that kind of stuff. But so you should know where it's going and what, you know, you can, you know, put it up on the fridge and know, you know, hey, I feel like playing cards tonight. Well, I'm going to, you know, the Rockford BMW Hall.
Yeah. Wow. It's some serious organizational skills there.
Absolutely.
Crazy. So did you get to play or do anything while you were there with them?
No, actually, I didn't get to play at all in Chicago. I wanted to. We went to, after I had lunch with the Rockford owner, Chicago Joe, and I went over to an event they had it just down the street. Actually, in a bowling alley. You would have loved it. back in their little, event center, seems kind of strong. Party room, I guess. But it's actually bigger than a party room. Somewhere between a party room and a convention center, or event center. And they had it set up, and he said it was, you know, a smaller venue than they normally do. It's in an area of the state that they don't normally do it. But I thought they set it up pretty well, and, you know, a lot of people were having fun. And then they were getting ready to call a sit-and-go, like a little $25 sit-and-go or something. And I turned to Chicago Joe, and I'm like, all right, what time do we got to leave to get to our next appointment? And he's like, probably 20 minutes. I'm like, ugh, not enough time to do a sit-and-go. And you know Joe, right? Oh, if you want to play, sit down and play. Yeah. I'm like, no, Joe. The sit-and-go's going to... Let's hope it takes me longer than 20 minutes to play a sit-and-go.
Well, if it wasn't six-handed, you'd have been out in 20 minutes. But six-handed, you'd probably win it, so... I don't know what your audience, but
but I would have loved to play it. I mean, again, I spent so much time playing casinos, and obviously that's where I prefer to play. But you know, when you get to do these charity events and things, you know, like coming up the Sunday, I get to fill in for you at the Deep Stack Charity Class.
Yeah.
You've been doing that the last couple of years while I've been traveling, but I like something different like that. It's fun, and I would have liked to play, but schedule did not allow.
That's all right. You'll be back.
That's true. Absolutely.
So we got a hotline call this week. And for those of you who don't know, our hotline number is 813-448-1120. And if you call it, we use it, we'll give you something cool. This one comes right up the street from us. This is Matt.
Hi, this is Matt from Orlando, and I'm catching up on some of my old podcasts. And I just listened to the one where you talked about the anti-penultimate position. And I just wanted to let you know that it actually goes on further from there. If the hijack is the anti-penultimate position, then the middle position player that plays right before him technically is the pre-anti-penultimate position, and the middle position before that would be called the pro-pre-anti-penultimate position. And if you were playing at a six-handed table, then technically the big blind would be considered the pro-pre-anti-penultimate position, the under-the-gun player would be the pre-anti-penultimate position, and the remaining middle position player would be the anti-penultimate position. So you feel free to pepper some of those words into the hand of the week, or maybe in an O'Malley smooth. Otherwise, I love the podcast. Thanks, guys.
That was way too many syllables.
I will never remember all of that. Oh, man.
You know, when I was listening to it, I was even mumbling and stumbling with my voice just trying to keep up.
Yeah.
And he nailed every word, right?
Yeah, that was pretty good. I wonder if he, like, rehearsed that a few times before he went over and had a script or something, because that was pretty good.
If he did, he's going to be like Jack Nicholson there, man. That was sending you crazy trying to Remember that.
I'm in the pre-anti-penultimate seat. Oh, my God. Imagine saying that around the table. Oh, man.
Oh, it'd be great if, you know, if we ever do our strategy book, that we'll just name it all that. You know, the graphics in there are going to, yeah, you know, look like a Google map. You know, you're not going to be able to read anything because there's so much on it.
Well, I was PAP. That was the pre-anti-penultimate seat. I was in the PAP seat.
Oh, I love it.
Well, Matt, I'm glad you have too much time on your hands. I always appreciate guys doing stuff like that for us. And good stuff. Very funny.
Absolutely. And a reminder, everyone else, call the hotline at 813-448-1120. If we use your clip, we're going to send you something absolutely fantabulous. Like, we're going to send Matt right now a copy of the ebook You Called Me With What? by Rick Danford. Available for just $1.99 on Amazon.com.
Oh, my God. All right, so we got a mailbag. Michael Cantor, he's been writing into us for years.
Yes, it's been a while, though, but yes.
Yeah, gotta love having him write in. He says, I was in Vegas and ended up way down. Hey, finally somebody who actually played and lost. That doesn't usually happen. With only one winning poker session. Like the person who asked about moving from 2-4 to 1-2 no limit. And that was a few weeks ago, I guess, or whatever, but... He said, I realized this trip that I used to be even or winning years ago when there was only limit cash games. But since I've started playing no limit cash, I have been a losing player. I did have a couple of situations that still stick with me, both with the same player. This was a 1-2 no limit cash game at the Mirage, my favorite place to play when I'm out there. Mm-hmm. I was in early position with A6 of hearts and limped. The villain, about four to my left, also limped, as did the blinds. The flop was Jack of Hearts, Seven of Hearts, Queen of Spades. Man, I feel like I'm doing Hand of the Week. You going to answer this one for me? The blinds checked to me, and I bet $7. The villain called, and the blinds folded. The turn was a Ten of Clubs. So now it's Jack of Hearts, Seven of Hearts, Queen of Spades, Ten of Clubs. I bet $20, and the villain went all in for about his last $70. I didn't think he had King 9, and was sure he didn't have Ace King. I had the nut flush draw, and also had Kings as outs for Broadway. I called, river was a blank, he turned over Jack 8 and won the pot. The next time I was in the big blind with Jack 9 and checked after four limpers, including the same villain, the flop was Jack 4-6 rainbow. I bet $8 into a $10 pot, and once again got heads up with the villain. Turn was a 7, I bet 20, he called. River was a 5, giving 4 to a straight on the board, I bet $40, he raised an additional 100. Though I was tempted to call, I couldn't see how, with the potential straight on board, my one pair could win and fold it.
Well, this is what I wrote back to Michael. You know, first of all, power to you, brother. I do well in limit cash games. I still have not mastered the no limit cash for whatever reason. But that being said, of course, these are just two examples that he pulled out of, you know, entire trip, right?
Right.
But I think both of these situations, the problem isn't with the game. No limit. The problem here was with hand selection and how you play them. And I can see why, if this was a trend, and again, this is just two hands, like I said, but this is a trend, I can definitely see why he's running into the buzzsaw out there. I mean, early position with ace of hearts, six of hearts, that's a fold every time. And you just get yourself in trouble by limping. And then Jack 9, obviously in the big blind, you're going to check. But then to bet into it on a Jack 4-6 board, maybe, all right. But then, you know, it gets tougher now that these other cards come, and it doesn't really help your hand. At that point, you're just putting you in a bad situation, particularly because you're out of position. So I'm just going to say off of these two hands, I think that seems to be the bigger problem for Michael right now, not necessarily the adjusting to the new style of game.
I agree. Well, here's the thing I think, too. When you're playing no-limit cash games, every savvy player at that table is playing for one reason and one reason only. To win your stack. And the reason why they're there limping is they're doing it with all kinds of cards that, you know, are speculative. So let's take the Jack 4-6 rainbow hand, for instance. Mm-hmm. Somebody who's got a decent stack in front of him, like this villain who's already shown a penchant for what seems to be playing hands that you didn't think he could play, could easily limp with 5-8, you know, anything like that, 5-3, who knows? because it's a limp. You know, I mean, when you've only got to put $2 in and you can win $120 from you, that to me, I'm getting pretty damn good odds on my money to try to felt you. So when you have jack nine and you hit a jack on five people in the pot with you who didn't put any extra money than they had to in, you can't bet out and you're out of position the rest of the hand. Maybe a check raise there to see if somebody's really serious, but even then, you know, you're looking at this guy, if he really did have 5-3, he might not go anywhere anyway, and then he hits a 7. So really, these guys, even the, you know, like when Scott said he'd fold A6 in another position, I don't know if I would, if I was playing in a real passive game, I might limp with A6 suited, make my flush, but you're, Scott's right, though, you always end up getting in trouble because you get sucked in by the turn, or you'll hit your 6, and now what do? Or hit your ace, and you're like, wait a minute, you know, I only have a 6 for a kicker. But, you know, you got to be real disciplined with your A6. If you flop the nut flush draw, then you play it aggressively, or, you know, if you flop 2 pair, that's something. But if you hit an ace on a really coordinated board, or 6 high, you know, you got to be careful. And it seems like you weren't very careful there either, so, and you're out of position. So I just think that when I play cash games, I'm there to take your stack. So I could be playing any 2 cards, because when that golden flop comes for a $2 price, you know, you're not going to put me on that hand, and I'm going to take you for everything you got. So that's the difference between limit and no limit, I think.
Another thing that might come up here, I know this happens to me, Fast and I talk about this a lot, or used to when we used to travel as much as we did to play. One of them, I think, is if you don't, and I don't know what Michael's home poker situation is like, but, you know, sometimes when you go to Vegas and you get to play a lot in a short amount of time, you want to make the most of it. And you end up playing more than you should, and then that ends up costing you as well too. So that could be something that's going on here. But the other thing too is, you know, eventually you need to become a really savvy no limit cash game player. But really, for most of us, playing the 1-2 no limit, as boring as it is, playing straight ABC is the way to make money at it.
Yeah, and I think I talked about that once before, where I had a couple of losing sessions when we were going to Vegas more than once a year and stuff. I had a couple of losing ones after winning like 3 or 4 straight, and I'm like, why am I losing? And I started thinking to myself, you know, I'm trying to play too fancy for these players. They're almost all tourists. Why don't I just play ABC? And I talked about that on the show. I think it was like not an epiphany, but it was close to one of those. And it was like, you know what, when I go to Vegas, I'm just going to play ABC, find the people that I know are targets, and then just take some money off them, be happy, and go to bed. And like you said, not overplay. Don't play too much just because I'm there. Yeah. And, it comes full circle. That's exactly what I said a few years ago.
Yeah, and I think it's great advice. You know, if you want to get creative and, quote-unquote, have fun playing, then I think you need to get into some tournaments. You know, even play some of those $25 Donk Fest, if it's about enjoyment for you. Because it is tough to just sit there and wait for premium hands and bet them and get paid off. You know, they don't come very often. So, right. And particularly if you're only out in Vegas for a couple of days or a week, you know, you don't want to sit there just waiting for those hands. But if at the end of the trip you're a losing player and you're wondering why, sometimes, you know, that's why.
Yeah, good points.
All right, Michael, we appreciate you writing in. It's been a while since we heard from you, so we're going to send you a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo, and ask about the AnteUp logo version, and be sure to use code AnteUp for free shipping, and remember to email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com, and you too might be a winner.
Floor! I think everybody knows what's coming now when I do that.
Maybe.
I was trying to, you know. All right. So anyway, call the floor. Another one this week. This is a good one. We are in a 2-5 no-limit hold'em game in a Philadelphia casino. A woman who has about $1,000 in the case that this is her last hand and racks up $700, leaving about $300 on the table. Most of that $300 goes into the last hand, leaving her with $15 in front of her on the river. She bets the $15, and the other player in the hand wants to raise her. She says, those chips aren't in play. This is the last $15 in play. The other player asks the dealer if the chips in the rack are in play, and the dealer says no. The player calls the 15, and another player not in the hand says he believes the chips in the rack should be in play. Meanwhile, the woman flips over her hand, and then the floor is called. The floor decides that the player can take the $15 back and do whatever he wants. He raises to $300, and she calls. He had the straight, and she had top pair, top kicker. I would think that once he called the 15 after asking the dealer that the hand is over, but apparently not. That came from Steve from New York.
Yeah, that's what Jody says. We play table stakes poker. You can't just rack up partier ships and declare them no longer in play. The dealer made a mistake here by telling the player that racked ships weren't in play. The player in the hand made a mistake by not protecting his hand and asking for a decision. The other concerned player is absolutely correct in asking for the floor. Contrary to the popular belief, you shouldn't get involved if you aren't in the pot. You really don't want to keep quiet here and let some ridiculous situation occur that may cost you money later, and you have every right to ask for the floor if you were dealt into the hand. The floor person did an awesome job of doing what is best for the game, the players, and the room. Great call by the floor person! Exclamation point!
And I have to agree, there you can't go south.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where I don't know if it's a Philadelphia casino, so it's relatively new. I mean, sometimes you're in these casinos that have been around a long time, and it's like Euros, and you know they have this quote unquote local tradition or something. This has got to be something that you just got to, as a poker player, you got to know. And it's good that you're listening to the show now and learning it if you haven't heard it. You can't do that.
No.
You know, you can't. I mean, I was on this last trip, someone was telling me a story about how someone took a couple $100 off the table, put in his pocket, and then there's an all-in. They're like, where's the rest of it? And he's like, oh, there is no more of it. I put the rest of my pocket. And they're like, you can't do that. And he's like, sure I can. And no, you can. They made it take him out and put it back in. You know, you just got to it's just stuff you got to learn. I mean, this is kind of the problem, I think, with home games, you know, because in home games, this stuff happens all the time, right? Mm. You're playing with friends and you're like, all right, I'm going to take this off the table or I'm going to put this on the table or whatever, and no one says anything. And then you get in the casino, you don't realize it. So, but this is something you just got to realize. And you're right. I think the guy that wasn't in the hand, he is my hero in this. You know, just, you know, speaking up, that's tough to do. It's tough to speak up when you're not in the hand and say something like that. But I think you got to make that clear. You got to say, wait a minute, what's going on here?
One, you know what? This is embarrassing, but one time when you and I were playing together in Vegas, and there was a guy in, like I think it was like the four seat or something, and you and I were kind of at the end, and he had a ton of red chips in front of him. And I took a pretty big pot off him. And I think you did. You might have taken a pot off him too. I can't remember, but we were talking to each other about, wow, that guy had a bunch of chips before we sat down. And then I looked over and he had like no chips left. And I don't remember him losing the chips.
Right, right. I do remember this.
Remember this? I can't remember what poker room that was though. I remember exactly what it looked like. I remember exactly where we were sitting, but I don't remember what room that was.
Yeah.
And so I said to him, "Hey," and he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "What happened to all your chips?" And I was like kind of seeing, did you go south or are you leaving or something? Yeah. And he was more like, I lost them all to you, jerk, you know, or something. And I felt, I was really embarrassed after I said it because I was like, I wanted a chance to win the rest of those chips, but he had lost them to me and some other people already. And I felt terrible, but I was like this guy in this call to floor where speaking up, because I didn't want somebody going south on the table. They have every right to try to win those chips. Like this lady, hey, you want to take 700 off? Then take the rest of 300 off too and get out. You can't do that, you know. But that was real embarrassing, and I can't remember that poker room now.
Yeah, I can't remember either, but, you know, the other thing about this, and I'm not defending the dealer here, the dealer obviously was absolutely wrong here, but it does get tricky when people start racking up, and not just for the dealer, but I think for the other players, you know, because you're racking up, and then you see a lot of these things where, like, I got one more hand, folks. I always like when players at least announce I'm playing one more hand. And then, so they end up winning that hand, of course, right? And then they're racking, they're stacking that chips, and the dealer's like, you want another hand? Oh, sure. And then, you know, but, you know, if you're not listening or not hearing, you might think they're not in, and it gets confusing at that point. So, you know, I think as players, what we should do is, you know, be very clear when we're ready to go that we are out and not do this half rack and half not, and, you know, I mean, there's nothing to say that you can't just, all right, I'm out, and now start racking up your chips. This pre-racking, I guess, is the problem.
Yeah, that's one of the major reasons why they don't let you play out of your rack when you're at a table and stuff, because it's so confusing. You don't know what's going on, what's in play. Are there chips underneath it or chips behind it? Are you stealing from the rack or whatever? And it's just a big hassle. So when you're out, you're out. Just be out.
You're out, you're out. All right, Steve, we appreciate you sending in the call to Florida this week, and we are going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store, and remember to email your call to Florida question to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and Jody will answer them, and if we use it on the show, we'll give you something great as well, too. And we actually got a flurry of them coming in now, so which is good. I like the segment of the show.
Yeah, it seems to go in waves. Hey, feedback. Another part of your favorite part of the show, I guess. It came from Lauren, one of our longtime listeners. I've played with him a couple of times. Great guy, and he's got a little input on dealer fines.
Hey guys, it's Lauren calling, and I'm calling in response to the discussion about the poker dealer who got fined $75,000 because he stole $200. I would just like to point out that, first of all, he wasn't stealing from the casino. He was probably robbing players because he's taking money out of the pot and putting it into his own tips. The other thing I'd like to point out is he didn't steal $200. He got caught stealing $200. He could have been doing this for months and months. He could have stolen thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars over time. We don't know that. We just know that he got caught this one time stealing $200. And so I don't think the fine is that crazy outrageous. He stole some players, and I hope he gets punished for it.
All right, well, I'm going to say a couple of things here. I mean, I didn't fully research this, but you know, his point about stealing from players, not the casino, I don't know whether we know that, at least not from the story that I read, and maybe Lauren has read other stories and knows that. I mean, it's quite possible that he was stealing out of the rack as well, too. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really willing to jump to that conclusion unless I know more. But the other part, though, I do have a little bit of a problem with. Yes, he's got caught stealing $200, but the story I read, it was over like 10, 15, 20 instances. So it wasn't like he took $200 out of a pot. Mm. You know, so what happened, and this is my experience with other rooms, when they catch someone doing this, or they think they've caught somebody doing this, they then go back and review those tapes for every time that dealer's been in the box and look for it. So I'm not saying that's what happened here. Again, there's a lot of stuff that we don't know here, but I would be surprised if they didn't go back and figure out how many times, and that's how they came up with this number, and really did a thorough investigation. Otherwise, I'm not sure why they wouldn't do that. I mean, everything's recorded and saved, so. But I could be wrong. But those are just my points. But
no, I mean, that's what I was thinking as well. I was thinking that once there's suspicion, then they have those huge security tapes that they can go back and follow him from, you know, from down to town or whatever, and say, okay, they did it again, they did it again, and then by the time they got enough up, like, all right, look, this guy's clearly stolen, you know, over $200 or whatever, we got to let him go, and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I can see that there should be a severe penalty for this, but still, I don't think he stole $75,000 from somebody, and it's just, that was just a huge fine to me. No matter what he's been doing, and believe me, I want this guy's never going to get a job again in his industry, so he's gone anyway.
Yeah not defending the guy at all. Yeah
but $75,000 $86
seems pretty steep. Life.
Yeah. Or 75 for life. In
this case, 75 for life.
75 grand, you're pretty much screwed. So.
You know what was funny about, I know we've talked about this on the show before, but you know, when you hang out with poker players and non-poker things in a non-poker environment happen, and then you just giggle like it's the funniest joke you've ever heard on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
We were at this chain called Culver's up in the Midwest. Apparently, people think it's as good as In-N-Out Burger. They're obviously delusional. It's good, but it's not In-N-Out.
We'll never get them as a sponsor.
Yeah, of course not. when you go up there, you order, and then they give you one of these little number things that you put on your table, and they bring the food out to you, which is really cool, right? Mm-hmm. So I was there with our Ramsey, our poker cruise manager, and another poker dealer, and he gets, there I go, thank you, sir, your number's 86. And then he's like, great, I can't eat here now. They kicked me out for ordering the double-double.
That's pretty funny.
All right, we got some housekeeping this week. We'll let everybody know we have only 15 hotel rooms remaining for our Antioch Poker Tour World Championship July 28th to August 3rd at the luxurious Hard Rock Punta Cana All-Inclusive Resort in the Dominican Republic. Book today at antiupmagazine.com/world championship so you don't get shut out of our deeply discounted room rates. And just a reminder, we have 14 tournaments with buy-ins as low as $115. The winner of the $1,100 main event will appear on the cover of Antiup Magazine, and there's still time for you to win your way down there at Dover Downs in Delaware, Sarasota Kennel Club in Florida, and Cypress Bayou Casino in Louisiana.
Downstream Casino Resort is hosting its Four States Poker Championship Antiup Poker Tour event May 17th to the 26th. Its schedule is posted at antiupmagazine.com/downstream. More details on all AUPT events, including the Antiup Poker Tour World Championship Scott just talked about, can be found at antiuppokertour.com. You know, that Downstream Casino schedule, man, that is just like the drooliest schedule ever.
Isn't it?
I just want to play every event.
I've never been upset about going on any poker tours before. This is the first time. Only because I would love to go up there and play those events.
Yeah.
But speaking of the cruise, if you can't make it to Oklahoma, we'd love to have you on the May 20th Antiup Poker Cruise out of Miami. Still time and still a few cabins left to get you on there. And then don't forget, we're sailing out of New York City and Tampa later this year. You get all the details on all three of the cruises, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs and Texas Hold'em Poker Tours at antiupcruises.com.
Cool. Hey, we got a very interesting news desk this week. And it actually bleeds into our main topic as well. It's an online poker news day. I love it.
Yeah, in fact, actually, the other item, too, is online related as well, too.
Kinda, kind of interesting. Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, as Chris said later on the show, we'll talk about Ultimate Gaming dealing the first regulated hand of poker in U.S. history, but there's plenty of other online poker news, too, this week. In Massachusetts, an amendment was added to the state of Massachusetts' fiscal 2014 budget that would allow online poker in that state if approved. In Illinois, a measure to allow internet poker has been tucked into another bill, but now will be considered on its own. That's always a bad thing, I think, for us. And then finally, in their wrap-up of online, Foxwoods Resort Casino is partnering with Game Account Network to create a Play Money online poker site with an eye toward offering real money poker when it's allowed by law there.
You know, I was all excited because I thought I was going to get to do the "and finally" thing that you do every single week. And you ruined it. You even said "and finally" for the Foxwoods item. So now I got to come up with a different thing to say here. Ultimately, here is our final item. The man who hacked Joe Seabock's email account, stealing nude photos and threatening to post them online unless Seabock and others paid him, has been sentenced to 42 months in prison. See, now here is an indication where 42 months. Now, that, to me, seems like a proper fine.
Yeah.
$75,000 for taking $200. But here, blackmailing and stealing, yeah, you deserve a few years in prison.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to guess that I'm going to go on a limb and say Joe Seabock thinks it was too light of a punishment. This has actually been a fascinating story. I didn't really hear too much about this when it happened a couple years ago. But really, this is the reason that Joe really kind of took this hiatus from poker. He was mortified by this, thought that it hurt his ability to represent the brands that he was representing and play cards. And so, in his opinion, this really kind of wrecked his career.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And obviously, he didn't give up any money, but to the pair that extorted him. But that's a heavy price to pay.
Yeah.
For somebody else's actions. So, and I meant to put the link on the file here, and I totally forgot. But I was captivated. I think you can do a search for this story on Google, and it'll come up. It was like a 5-webpage story. I mean, it took me like an hour to read it, but it recreated the entire FBI investigation into this.
Wow.
Using transcripts and reports, and it was as riveting as any CSI show on TV at night. It was really, really amazing how they put this all together and caught the dudes responsible. And again, I feel terrible talking about how awesome this was without it being able to tell anybody where to go. But search for like Joe Seabock FBI or something like that, and I'm sure you'll find it. And it's well worth taking some time to read.
Well, the good news is that Seabock knows how to make wine now.
Yes, true.
So, you know, now he can maybe resume his career as a poker player. Now this is all behind him, but he's better for it because he knows how to run a wine business. So, Hey, you know, O'Malley's move took a hiatus too because you were busy on the road. So we get to actually wrap up an episode today. Very exciting. Let's refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're sitting at a $1, $2, no-limit hold'em cash game. We've got 400 in front of us, and have had a pretty decent night. It's a full 10-handed table on a busy night at this card room. And the action has been coming in waves. It gets especially aggressive after someone takes a bad beat. The under-the-gun calls, and it's folded around to the hijack who makes it $10 to go. He just had to rebuy after someone sucked out on his flopped straight, turning a flush. He sits with 200. We're in the cutoff with the jack of spades, jack of hearts. Great. Can't win with them, can't beat them. We'd like to discourage anyone else from entering this hand, and we'd like to buy the button. We make it $25 to go. Everyone else folds, including the under-the-gun limper, and the hijack thinks for quite a while before putting in a call, almost like he wanted to raise. There's roughly $50 in the pot, and the flop comes the king of spades, king of hearts, ten of hearts. Our opponent bets $30, leaving him only about $150 behind. What could he have here? We make the call to see what he's going to do on the turn. And with $110 in the pot and the seven of clubs falling, he surprises us by checking. We put $60 in, and he thinks for a long time, once again, before calling. There's now $230 in the pot, and the three of hearts comes on the river. Our opponent once again takes a sweet time before checking. What does this check mean? Is it a missed ace-queen? Queen-jack? The flush got there. Maybe it's ace-10 or nines. Could he also have jacks? So, are we happy with the size of the pot, or are we betting for value?
All right, I'm going to say our opponent, whether intentionally or not, hasn't allowed us to get much information out of him. And for that reason, we're in the always dreaded either way ahead or way behind situation. And when I'm in those situations, I'm inclined to check behind here because I think it's going to be too costly for us to put in a bet that of a size that would get a better yet vulnerable hand to fold.
Am I talking to Lee Childs? Or I'm sorry, that's an inside joke. Well, you know what? I can't put any more money in this pot. And really, why would I? Do I really think a hand like queen-queen or ace-ace will fold? Or a hand like 9-9 will call? Yeah, the only way I would bet is if I believe the player has a hand that's better than mine but would fold it. And how could I believe that given the info we have? So I'm done. I'm checking behind or whatever you want to check in here. I'm not betting anymore. So I want to hear what happens.
Hello again. This check seems and feels like he's given up on the hand. With only $90 left and $230 in the pot, why not just put the $90 in? It's less than half of what's already in there. If he had anything good, like a king or the hearts, he couldn't risk us checking right behind him. He'd be losing value, unless he has a king and is scared of us having the hearts. But if that's the case, would he really fold trip kings for a $90 river bet into a $320 pot? I doubt it. So why not just put it in now? Nah, this feels more like nines or ace-10. And we're actually kind of hoping it is. There might be a chance he frustration calls his last $90 to us. Either way, we put it in there. He flings his cards at the dealer, and the queen of spades flutters face up. Was it queen jack? Queens? Well, we take the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, you can win with jacks. It's just harder than pulling teeth. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, we won. Yeah. But in the long run, I think we're better off taking my partner's advice here about what hands our opponent will call, raise, and fold with there. And that's, you know, it's probably second level. It's not even in the third or fourth level. But it's amazing to me how often myself and I think other players don't make that kind of calculation. Mm-hmm. At the end, we think, okay, I've got my hand, it's probably better, 50% better than the other hands, without actually thinking about what's going to happen. And I think you were spot on beforehand. You know, some of these nicer hands are not going to fold. So really, you only got some of these middling hands, and at that point, it's probably unlikely that they're going to call. So, you know, you're going to get raised by a better hand, and the worse hands are going to fold anyhow, and you're taking unnecessary risk at that point.
Yeah, I feel like O'Malley knew more about this player than really he let
probably
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because really, what's the point of shoving unless you thought you were behind, and this was a type of player who would fold? So I can't endorse a fold here unless I knew that about the player, and there's no way I could have known it given what he had said in the show. So I that's a tough shove to make for me. I just that's it. I check and hope I have the best hand.
Yeah. Well, hey, another great O'Malley's move, though.
Absolutely.
Backstage, the girls were playing five cards, stood by the stairs.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Lily had two queens. She was hoping for a third to match her pair.
Hey, Chris, it's been a long time coming, but this week we finally saw the first hand of regulated online poker dealt in the United States. UltimatePoker.com, the online poker site run by Ultimate Gaming, launched in Nevada to residents and visitors of that state. And joining us today to tell us about the launch and more about UltimatePoker.com. Wow, I'm so excited, I'm flustered. UltimatePoker.com is Ultimate Gaming's Chief Marketing Officer, Joe Versace. Thanks for joining us today, Joe. We know you're really busy.
Yeah, no problem at all.
All right, well, I'll get us started here. Obviously, you're the Chief Marketing Officer, so I have to think that this week has been even more special for you than other Ultimate Gaming executives. Not only did the site launch, but the coverage it received has been phenomenal, including a front-page story in USA Today, which even chose a poker chip as its page one icon for the day. Tell us a little bit about this whirlwind this week has been for you.
Yeah, no, it has been exciting, and obviously, you know, I can't take a lot, you know, all the credit for it. We've got a great PR team. We've also got the backing and support of, you know, our sister company, Station Casinos, and our partner, the UFC, which, you know, really opened a lot of doors in terms of media exposure. That, and I think it was, you know, really impressive how the global gaming community really embraced this and understood how important this was, you know, and, you know, bringing trust and transparency back to the U.S. and back to American gaming, you know, was something that, you know, we knew we'd get a lot of coverage for, but it really blew our mind on how much it actually, you know, it actually picked up. So, yeah, it was a good day.
Well, like Scott said, it was a long time coming, and we're all very, very excited that it's here. And so, without question, every online site in Nevada wanted to be first, and no doubt your competitors are just green with envy today. Just how important was it for UltimatePoker.com to be the first, and what steps did the company take to be sure it was first?
Well, I mean, it was critical, and we set out to be first, and we had been, you know, in the pipeline since, you know, early last year. We've worked 18 months to get to this point. You know, a couple things. First of all, what we did was we really just kept our heads down. We didn't say anything in the media. We just worked every single day, and we had every person in the company working to get us to market first. The other thing that we did was we tried to ensure that we'd have success by, you know, putting forward as skinny an offering as possible while still catering to the customers. We recognized that there was a great first mover advantage. We wanted to take part in that, you know, and that was our main goal, and that we could iterate on the product quickly once we worked to market and got through the field trial. So very much, you know, that's the reasoning behind launching with only Texas Hold'em. Our software actually supports 20 variations of games. So as far as I know, I think that's the most of, you know, any main poker company. So we do have those games in the bank that we'll be releasing soon. But really, you know, we prioritize being first to market and having a stable, secure, safe platform over everything except for air and water. And that's what we spent the last 12 months on. And I think that's how we got to market so quickly.
I love it. All right. Well, you'll have a brief honeymoon as the only online provider. And most industry watchers are curious whether a state as small as Nevada can support more than a dozen online sites. Obviously, the hope is to eventually be offer your product to players in other states through interstate compacts. But in the meantime, just how fierce do you expect the competition to be, and what strategies do you have to maintain your competitive edge?
Well, you know, hopefully maintaining our competitive edge obviously starts with being first to market and getting the chance to engage the customers and engage the poker community and show them what sort of team we've built. Because our company very much is a throwback to, 8, 9 years ago when poker companies were run by poker players, and the people making the decisions made those decisions in the best interest of the poker community at large, you know, whenever possible. That's the sort of team we brought in, really experienced people that know what they're doing and know what the poker players want. So we feel like we're going to have an advantage when it comes to actually running operations, you know, because we are online poker players, you know, pretty much from top to bottom.
Right.
So we think that's going to be, you know, huge for us. We also feel like leveraging Station Casinos here in Nevada, which has a huge database of people who don't just come once a year, but come back 2 or 3 times a month, is going to be critical. Our 17 locations are going to make it convenient for people in the state to, you know, at least in the Las Vegas area, to go and withdraw money and deposit money. You really can't walk outside without tripping over one of our properties. So we feel like that's big. And then the other thing is just using the UFC and stations to make poker fun again and expand, you know, the underrepresented demographics that, you know, we think could enjoy poker. So, you know, the people that enjoy boarding pass points or free buffets or free stays at the station casinos or play the slots or play the video poker, we feel like, you know, poker kind of got a little too serious the last 4 or 5 years. And we think there's a big opportunity to bring fun back to the game and give people unique rewards that, you know, that get them back interested in just having a good time and realizing that, you know, it's not just, you know, it's not just Supernova Elite or nothing, that there really is a really big delta there where people can just play and have a lot of fun.
Well, you know, one of the advantages Nevada operators have is being able to offer online gaming, not just to residents of the state, but also to visitors. Nevada is by far the biggest poker tourism state. Players around the world can create an ultimatepoker.com account and fund it anytime and play once they're within the state's borders. Now, anybody who's been to Vegas or Nevada has seen the "We Heart Locals" slogan for the station, so we know you've got the local people interested. But will you be specifically targeting out-of-state customers with your promotions as well?
Absolutely. Our founder, Tom Breitling, actually was one of the pioneers of the online travel space, so we kind of understand that tourism. It's in our DNA. We know that 41 million people come to Las Vegas every year, and a good portion of those are prospective poker players. And I'm also, you know, quite aware that poker season's coming up and that we're going to have, you know, 30,000 serious poker players here that are, you know, going to probably not all make it to the final table of the big event. And, you know, I don't think that you can only sit out in 110 degree sun so long. And if you're a poker player, when you go inside, I mean, we all know what we want to do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you mentioned some of the synergies that you have going on through your company, but not only is Ultimate Gaming a subsidiary of Station Casinos, which offers several well-respected casinos in the Las Vegas area where players can deposit and withdraw for the online accounts, but the ownership has also turned Ultimate Fighting Championship into the juggernaut that it is today. Tell us a little bit more than you already have about how those two operations will blend with the operations of UltimatePoker.com and what players can expect from being a part of a site that's affiliated with all three of them.
Well, I mean, in Nevada, obviously, the powerful partner really is the Station Casinos. A lot of people may not know a lot about Station Casinos, but it was a company that essentially invented the locals market. And the reason that they have such a dominant position is because they take care of the customers. They do real-time rewards and CRM. They know what sort of bonuses the players want. They give great bonuses. They have an incredible rewards program. And they've built, you know, 17 locations in Nevada, and their database is 1.8 million people, and they're all, you know, and they're all really active players. They're not the sort of people that come back once every 6 months, as I mentioned. They're here, you know, a couple times a month and even sometimes a couple times a week. So we're going to leverage that. And, you know, we are a subsidiary of Station Casino, so we get to benefit from all the learning that they've had in the last 30 years in the locals market, which is huge. And then the UFC, I mean, we're currently the exclusive online gaming partner of the UFC. We've been doing brand building exercises on the mats of the UFC for the longest time. It's seen great response and awareness. And, you know, the UFC is in 800 million homes, and they're the fastest growing sport in the world. And they've been, you know, where we are. They were regulated in one state, and they literally went on the road and went to every single state, and behind strong regulations and a really strong belief in their product, they got it regulated in every state, I believe, except one that has a sports commission. So, you know, it really, they laid the groundwork for us, and you know, it's going to be amazing to leverage. Not to mention their social media footprint is massive,
right.
Which, you know, is one click to conversion for us. They have 10 million fans on Facebook. They have a you know, massive YouTube community that we can leverage. And we also have, you know, the bigger thing is you're talking about two huge companies, but at the end of the day, you know, we all operate like a family business. So it's really easy to get things done quickly. If we want to give away a prize where a winner puts the belt on John Jones after a fight, I mean, that's really just a phone call for us, you know, and that's going to be a real big advantage because we can do a lot of these, you know, money can't buy prizes. We can do a lot of ticket add-ons and trips. We can combine station properties with, you know, large Vegas UFC fights and just do these kind of dream vacations that our players are going to love. So it's really going to be important moving forward. It opens a lot of doors. And at the end of the day, what it really does is it drives down our cost per acquisition and allows us to give back more to the players.
That's great.
Wow. Excellent.
I know your company is proud it has developed its own proprietary software, and that its technology is a big advantage. Can you tell us a little bit more about the software? I know you mentioned that you have Just Hold'em going now, but you have all the other games already. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Well, I can tell you as much as I can without kind of putting my foot in my mouth from a technical perspective,
okay,
obviously.
<that's> fine.
You know, what I do know is that we've acquired a platform, and we own our own technology, and, you know, and like you said, we are very proud of that. Not only because it allows us to control our own destiny, and that's sort of the DNA of both Station and the UFC, is to own and operate your own technology, but it also allows us to offer turnkey solutions and partnerships to other states as we grow. I mean, we're not looking, you know, to integrate a third party with another, you know, another partner for poker, another partner for casino, and try to patchwork some offering together. You know, we basically can deliver an end-to-end solution that can fit for not only poker, but, you know, any regulated game. So we're excited to play anywhere where there's opportunity and regulation. So I think that's important for us. Like I said, the game is, you know, the poker game itself is highly scalable. It has multiple variations of poker. And we feel like once we get into iterating in our version 2, we can pretty much close the delta on the market leaders pretty quickly in terms of features.
Cool.
Excellent. Antonio Esfandiari was our guest on our show last month, just before it was announced that he'll be UltimatePoker.com's first brand ambassador. Tell us why the site chose Antonio and what role you see him playing in the site's development.
Well, I mean, Antonio is one of those guys that, you know, you walk into a room and everyone knows where Antonio's at. And that is something that, you know, I've in 10 years in this business and 15 years in online gaming, I've only seen a couple of times. And, you know, once you find one of those guys, you really want to latch onto them and ride them, you know, as far as they'll go, because people just love to talk to Antonio. He can talk to anyone, and he can represent the brand in an incredible fashion. He's also known Tom Breitling for years. They're good friends. And when I sat down with Antonio after about 5 minutes, I knew he really understood what we were trying to do. He was fully behind it, and he was excited to be a part of kind of bringing poker back.
That's great.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks again for joining us today. We know you're really busy, but we want to extend our best wishes for UltimatePoker.com's success. And you got any last words for our listeners? Anything else about the site you want them to know?
No, just I wanted to thank you guys for having me on. I've been following you guys for a lot of years. I really appreciate what you guys do for poker in general. I love seeing you guys across the country when I'm in different poker rooms, so it's really great. And, you know, I just want to say thank the poker community for supporting us, for coming out, and, you know, showing that they want poker not only in Nevada, but, you know, across America. So it's been really great. The support has been terrific. And, you know, people have really welcomed us with open arms, and we really appreciate it. And we're going to work hard every day to kind of give poker players what they want.
Thanks, Joe. I really appreciate those words.
Excellent. And remember, folks, you can go to ultimatepoker.com, establish your account, even fund it. And then once you get into Nevada, you can start playing. So check it out. And thanks again, Joe. Have a good day.
Yep, hope to see you guys all this summer. I'll see you guys soon.
All right, take care.
Absolutely.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to Any Up.
Dan England is back on the show.
Where's he from?
I want to say he's from Colorado.
Colorado.
Correctly.
Not even.
Could be wrong.
That joke's getting old. I got to stop saying that, I guess.
Yeah. If he's not, then he should be from Colorado.
Okay, that's fair.
It's been a while since he wrote in, but he's got the hand of the week this week. And it's a 1-3 no limit cash game at the Wynn out in Las Vegas. So it's an all Vegas show this week.
Yeah, sort of. Pretty incredible.
Except for the parts that weren't. All right, so in this hand, it folds around to the button, who makes a raise to $13. We are in the small blind with the ace, queen of spades, and we have about $300 in front of us, and the button who made that raise has us covered. I would also say we don't have much of a read on this player because it's early in our session.
Oh, God. I don't think I could... Well, here's the deal. If we're in a tournament...
Okay, Monty Hall.
Yeah. If we're in a tournament, I play back at this guy right away because I think he's just stealing. But you're in a cash game. What's the point? Because you have position and you're trying to win $3 of raising with nothing. Yeah. So I feel like you might have a hand. And not that ace-queen's a bad hand. I just don't want to go broke with it either.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say it was suited?
Yes, ace-queen of spades.
Yeah, okay. To be honest, I would probably re-raise here. But if I did re-raise, I'd want to re-raise more than something that makes, you know, it easy for him to call, because I'm going to be out of position. I wouldn't mind just taking the $14 that's out there after the rake and everything. So, I mean, if I'm going to play it, I'd probably play it for like 40 or so, you know, 42, you know, something like that, even 50, and just get this guy to be like, yeah, do I really want to risk 50 with my ace-10 here or whatever it is?
Yeah.
And then if he has a bigger hand and he shoves on me or something, then, okay, I put 40 out there, but... He probably had a better hand than me, and if he just called, I might have lost a bunch more anyway, so this is probably how much I would have lost had we gotten into it. So I don't feel too bad about folding to a re-raise or a shove. So I feel like if I'm going to play this hand, I don't want to go broke with a queen in my hand, but I definitely think that maybe I should let loose with a raise here of like $50.
Okay, so I'm going to say this before the hate mail comes in.
Okay.
I think... a winning no-limit player will raise here. An experienced winning player.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to go back up to our mailbag this week. And again, I'm going to assume that a lot of us are still finding our way through 1-3 no-limit or 1-2 no-limit. And this is a hand where I think a lot of things are colliding here that suggests that we fold, as weird as that sounds, just fold and not worry about it. And some of those things are, one, we're out of position, we're in the worst position for the rest of the hand. That's never a good thing, regardless of whether you're a great player or not. It's early in our session. We don't have any information on these people, or at least the person that we're up against. That's always very damaging. And then it's ace queen. I think you're right. I think it's probably likely that this guy is just making a button raise, but we don't know that. I mean, if he's a decent player, you're right, it's not a tournament. You don't need to steal the blinds. So, you know, at some point I'm going to give him credit for something. So at this point, you don't know what he has, and these ace queens and ace jacks and ace tens, I keep talking about it on the show, but that's been a huge help to my game, getting rid of those hands and not getting in these bad situations where I end up finding myself dominated against people. And, you know, we got to get past the whole suited stuff. It doesn't help very much at all. In fact, actually, I think it gets you in more trouble, because if you get two spades on that board, you're not going anywhere, and you end up stacking off on a draw. So at this point, I've got $1 in this pot. It's early. I'm going to fold. I'm not going to like it, but I'm going to fold. And I'm going to hope maybe the big blind calls, so I can get an idea of really what the hands were involved here, so I'll know better next time. And I very well may, once I get better information on this guy, play ace-queen of spades completely differently in the same situation later on against him. But right now, I've got a dollar invested. I'm going to take my time and learn the table.
I'm just going to say one thing about that. And one of the things that I used to use as an excuse... to get away from hands is now something that I use to actually turn into my favor. And what you had said was, you know, we don't know how this guy plays because it's relatively early in our session, we just sat down. But the other thing is, he knows, doesn't know anything about us either, and we just sat down. So what kind of a player generally, because that's what you, when you first sit down at players, you generally say to yourself, okay, I don't know anything about this guy, so I have to go stereotypes. So if this guy on the button raises, and what kind of a player would sit down at a new table, if you don't know anything about him, make a raise to $50 there? The type of player that has a huge hand, who doesn't know anything about the table and wants... So, in a way, you could turn it to your benefit and say, you know what? This guy doesn't know how I play either. When I make $50 raise here, he's going to think I could be crazy and he doesn't want to get involved with me. He could think that I am ABC, so I have to have like aces or kings to do this. And he may just let it go. And then you could just play that card the rest of the way throughout the hand and even the session, really, because you've now started this image right away. It's a great opportunity to start an image for yourself. So, I like to turn that into a positive rather than, all right, I'm just going to get out of this guy's way because I don't know how he plays. Well, he doesn't know how I play either. Let's set my own pace and my own sort of image here. So I know what you're saying. To me, though, a suited ace-queen, I couldn't possibly fold it. I might consider calling. I would raise with it, but I might consider calling, but I just don't think I could ever fold that hand, not because I'm a better player than anyone else, because I don't think I am. I don't think that way, especially at the cash games. But I just couldn't get rid of that. That hand is so rare. You're not going to see that hand again for like 2 hours. So, I mean, to sit down and get that hand and to be in a situation where, okay, you're going to be heads up against this guy and you're going to be in bad position, but you've now taken command of not only what your image is, but also the, you know, the position in the hand you've actually taken over. So I couldn't fold it. Oh, my God, I think I would vomit.
Well, I'm fine vomiting, you know.
Well, you do it all the time.
I'm on a diet here, you know, so it's going to help me a little bit. But and you're right, like I said, I mean, I preface my comments by saying before the hate mail comes, so I expect there's going to be a lot of people that agree with you and very few that agree with me. But let me ask you this. We just talked about the $13 to pick up the blinds, assuming that the button is blind stealing, right? Which we don't know.
Right, we don't know.
To me, it doesn't seem very much different to be betting 50 to win 16. I mean, do you really want to call here?
Well,
and play this hand out of position?
I don't know if I want. I don't think I want
and
to call.
Not,
but
then you're wagering quite a bit of money to win what I believe to be not really worth that bet. Because you're right, you're going to have to put in probably at least a bet of 40 here, right?
Well, how about this? You know, when somebody says, "Well, I'm calling for information." Or they say, you know, I'm playing this hand to gauge, you know, what, you know. So to me, making this raise also is doing more than just trying to win $16. It's setting up an image. It's protecting my blind. It's doing a lot of things. It's not just, I mean, there's an intangible associated to this $40 to $50 raise I'm making. I won't get pushed around. There's a lot of things tied to it, and depending on his comments afterward or what he does, then I'll adjust to it. If he's like, oh, somebody, you know, what, you know, then you're like, okay, so now he knows that he thinks that I'm going to be tough the rest of the day. Or if he's like, well, you got to have a big hand because you just sat down, so he's going to think, okay, I'm an ABC player. So, I mean, there are things that I could get out of this besides just the $16 that's in the middle. So,
gotcha.
That's my thinking. I mean, I don't know if it's right or not either. But
last question before we move on: If let's assume that this 300 is all you have, that's your bankroll for the night,
right?
Do you still bet 50 there? Because I mean, I think you're taking an awful big risk of losing your stack on this first hand and losing that benefit, that residual benefit that you're talking about, which I get, I understand.
Well, I think
you don't have
it
anymore if you go bust on this hand.
The problem is that I still play – whenever I sit down, and this could be the detriment to me. I don't know. But when I play the way I think is optimal, not what I have. And, you know, it depends. Sometimes I'm in that whole I'm playing poker to be entertained today mood. And then I'll go there and I'll limp with the ace-queen, hope I get a flush and bust the guy or something. But there are other times where I'm like, I'm playing to win money today. I'm playing to get better today. I'm playing to outplay this guy. You know, there are different moods I'm in sometimes. So usually, though, the mood I'm in when I sit down is I'm going to play as optimally as I can today, no matter what my stack is, no matter what my bankroll is that day. That's just how I think. You know, like, I'm not going this time to Daytona, but when I do go over there, if I happen to get knocked out of the tournament and I play, I'm going to sit down and play cash because I've already made the 2.5 hour drive over there. It's another 2.5 hour drive, or 2 hour, whatever it is, drive back. I want to go over there and get some time in and enjoy myself because I want to play. So I may play differently that day than when I could just drive right down the road to Sarasota or Derby Lane or Tampa Bay Downs and know I can play there every single day, 15 minutes away, an hour away, or whatever. So it depends on the situation of where I am and when this happens to me. But generally, yes, I'm just playing optimally and not giving my buy-ins any thought.
Okay.
Does that sound fair?
Fair enough.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. All right, so here's the first flaw in this hand of the week. Dan doesn't say what he does. I'm going to say he calls because the hand continues.
Okay.
But he does say the big blind folds and then there's a flop. So I'm going to assume he calls. And, you know, here's the thing with calling. I think you mentioned that you might, and I know some other people might. Obviously, I want to fold here, but if I'm not going to fold, I'm going to raise. The call, I think, just gets you in more trouble. Now you're putting 13 into this pot, and you're kind of lying in wait, hoping that a big flop comes or you can outplay this person. But the problem is, outplaying him, you're going to be outplaying out of position. I would rather just raise here, maybe take it down. If not, establish myself as very strong and be able to fire straight out on most flops, then I would just call.
Well, it's a brilliant check raise hand in this situation because he'll never put you on ace queen of spades too, you know.
That's true.
So if you do limp with it, sounds like, are you just protecting your blind? You won't get pushed around, whatever. The flop comes, you hit your queen, you hit your ace, check, because you're giving up to him. He obviously is going to continuation bet. Now you've made not only the 13 that he put out there, but now he's going to put another 20 or 30 out there, and you've made 40 for making a $45 bet, you know, or something, rather than making 50 pre-flop. And so a limping, there is some, to me, there's some, you know, thought behind the limp and quality to that play, but yeah, I think it's a great check raise hand if you know, because the person who sits down at the table or just starts playing with somebody, you don't really get into the check raising right away. You think, okay, I'm gonna let him settle in a little bit. So the first hand you limp check raise or you pop it the first, you know what I mean? Oh my God, you've got this huge image already. So I like both plays if you get the right flop.
Okay. All right, so we're heads up to a flop of ace 10-9 rainbow. Dan gives us a little bit more information on his opponent. He says he strikes me as a solid and aggressive, but not overly so. But again, that's just his initial read because he hasn't been there very much.
Yeah, right. Well, again, I think it looks like he limped. So if he limped, then this is a great check raise hand, I think. I mean, you know, we could be screwed here and the guy could have flopped a set of tens on us or something weird, but I think it's a great check raise hand. He could totally
Or even maybe a wait to the turn to pounce kind of hand.
Sure. Sure, because then it looks like you're drawing. If a blank comes, it's a perfect check on the turn for him to now say, oh, okay, this guy's drawn, and he bets like 70, and then you go all in on him. And you know. But I like the check raise here if he called, I think, because I think that's what you need to do. You're setting up this situation, a situation we know as we know it is. It's kind of new. We're in a blind. We sort of call to defend, and then we pretend like we miss because we probably call with some sort of suited connector or something, and then check raise the guy with a really powerful top pair second kicker. So I like that play.
Okay. All right. Well, Dan's going to lead out for 25.
Yeah. See, now I'm just the opposite of what I... Because now there's no... Yeah, no. I don't like that play. I think if he had raised pre-flop, re-raised, then then it's perfect, you know, and this guy wants to get into it with you. Hey, I got ace queen with a pair of aces. So but now you're betting into him after just calling. To me, that's kind of weird. It's like they call that a donk bet. So I would check raise him, and I wouldn't have done that. So, but that's just me.
All right, well, our villain pauses a bit and calls.
Okay.
The turn is a 7. Still no flush possibilities, he says. And Dan keeps it up by betting 50 this time.
Man. Well, now I think you gotta bet because you know, I'm playing his hand now the way he's played it after that. I can't change what happened on the flop. So.
And the fact that our opponent paused a little bit, which you never know really what that means, but I'm going to get it as, did this guy really just call me with an ace pre-flop and now he hit his ace? Maybe I'll peel one more off.
Yeah.
7 really... There's not a lot of hands the 7 helped. So at this point now, I just need to, you know, get him to go away or call me late.
So, all right, so he bet 50, and what was the pot? Do you remember?
Let's see. What was 50?
About 76, 77.
76 plus the big blind, 79.
Yeah,
minus,
so
minus rake.
50's a decent bet there. I would probably agree with that at this point.
Okay, Dan says, I figure I don't know much. He could have an ace, and that's what I have him on. Ace King has me beat, but I have ace Jack beat. I want to keep control and bet. He pauses a long time. I look him over, and he doesn't appear to be breathing too hard. He's thinking not slow playing is my take on that. He finally calls.
Jeez. Okay. Is it possible that he's drawing? Is it really possible? Or does he have like a monster two pair or something like that and he's walking the dog? It's pretty scary. Because it's hand of the week, it's scary. And if you're in the moment, I'm just thinking, all right, I'm just going to keep betting this guy. But when it's hand of the week, you're always in the back of your mind, you're thinking, he's walking the dog on me. So you got to be careful on the river here. There's a lot of money in the pot now. It's like 180 in the pot.
Okay, so our opponent does call, and the river is the tray of diamonds, and what do we do now?
Well, I wonder if we do a defensive bet here, because if we check, he's going to bet, because he can't win if he's drawing and didn't get there, so he's going to bet, and if he has a hand, maybe he'll try to, you know, he may think his hand's better than ours and raise, but... you know, we're playing it like we've got it, so maybe a defensive bet, you know, of like 75 or something.
Yeah, this is where it gets tough, is when this guy raised preflop. He paused and called.
Yeah.
He doesn't strike me as being very happy with this hand. So I don't want to give up value here, but again, we have top pair, second kicker. Not that there's too much else out there that can beat us. This tray doesn't change anything. You know, I think you're right. I need to put something in here, I think, right?
I think so, because if you check and he shoves, then what do you do? Now you're put to the test. Whereas if you bet, you can make him fold, you can make him call, and then if he raises, you're not put to a test for your whole stack and you've got some money left. You know, at that point, you're like, well, obviously I'm beat. Because there's so much in the pot that if he wouldn't be doing that with rags. So, I mean, it's starting to feel like he could have had two pair, like ace-10, which was a hand that I joked about earlier. Or maybe even a set that he's slow playing. But I feel like we have to put something out there. And like I said, 75 maybe, I don't know, 65, 75, something that looks like we want to call, and it's not too much, or it's not damaging our stack where we can't fold, you know, something like 65 to 75 maybe, I don't know.
Okay.
Pretty brutal.
Dan says, I check at this point hoping to see a showdown. The pot is big enough for one pair. I plan to call a reasonable bet, and our opponent bets 100.
That's tough, and that's what I was worried of with a check. Because I think if you bet 75, the guy might call.
Yeah,
and if he raises you 70 from 75, he's gonna make it 150 or more, and at that point you're gonna know you're beat. So, I mean, I'm gonna call. You know why? Because I think this. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But it feels like the other thing. It feels like a float, but. Maybe the contemplation is a little Hollywood for the flow. I don't know. But I just don't think he could put us on ace-queen here. You know, I think he might put us on, you know, jacks or something, you know, and not afraid of the ace. And now that we've checked, you know, maybe he does have, like, ace-five or something. And he thinks now his aces are good and that we chickened out and he's just floating to steal it from us.
Right.
I don't know. But I'm just going to call the 100 and regret it.
Yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, I think this is a weird bet on his part. You know, we got to have something here, right?
Right.
The call, the preflop raise from him, and then donk bet, and then bet again, and now slow down. I mean, I know that's kind of weird, but we have to have something. So if he has nothing, he's going to have to bet pretty big to get us to lay this down.
Yeah.
Because he's got to assume that we're going to make a reasonable size call, and I don't know if 100 is big enough for that. So again, I don't know what he has right now, but I think this is probably a bad bet on his part because we got to call this.
Yeah, because that would be pretty much 300 in the pot.
Yeah.
So you got 300, you know, 100 to win 300, and you got ace queen. So you got aces with a queen kicker. It's a pretty decent hand. I don't like to have that big of a pot with just one pair. But just the way the hand came down, I feel like he could have been floating us. I really do. The long pauses, though, have me a little concerned just because he's trying to figure out how do I extract the most money out of this guy. Is he going to keep betting into my set of nines?
That very well could be,
You know, that's what makes me nervous. But the 7 and 3 do nothing, unless he had A7. You know, the 7 and 3 do nothing to me. So I think I'll just call and review the wreckage.
Right. All right, Dan says, I'm glad I bet the turn. His long pause made me think he didn't have the two pair. He may have ace-king, but he could also have ace-queen or ace-jack. I can't put him on a set either. I really think it's one of those two hands. So I call, and our opponent turns over ace-queen.
Oh, same hand. All right, we didn't lose. That almost never happens in Hand of the Week.
You know, it kind of makes sense, though. I'm a little surprised that he didn't raise us on the flop. You know, because he established dominance there. Again, I think he's got to think that we thought we were on a steal.
Yeah.
We hit our ace at that point. I mean, our bet there could have been a 10, it could have been a 9, you know, it could have been a straight draw. Really could be anything at that point, trying to take it away from us. I probably would have raised. I mean, maybe that's not the right thing, but...
Yeah, I think the flop was interesting that he didn't
and say, then after hey, that, I'm taking
control
call.
Back. Yeah, how does he not take control back after that flop? And I mean, it sounds like he's a guy that likes to exercise pot control. And then at the end, he was convinced that he was either good or couldn't win without a bet. And so,
and I'm not really sure even at the end I would be comfortable if I was him putting that bet in. I might just be like, woof, I get to go to showdown for free.
Yeah, with ace-queen, exactly.
Yeah.
I can't believe he made that bet.
Yeah. All right, Dan. Well, hey, we appreciate having you back on the show. We recently sent you something, but we'll remind everybody else to send their Hands of the Week to podcast at antiupmagazine.com, and we'll send you something wonderful like a deck of the J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. You can pick up your own decks in the Antiup store at antiupmagazine.com/shop.
All right. Real good show today. All this online news is making me very excited. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antiup is a production of antiupmagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Can you, is it Versace? How do you pronounce this place? Versace. Excellent.
Versace. That's correct.
Clearly, Scott isn't a fashionable person.
well, I wanted to think it was Versace.